juggle all these balls in the air at the same time. We're beginning with Rule Petition 20.04. The marshal has informed everyone that if you're not a presenter, you will have 5 minutes. And I have some timekeeping mechanisms with me on the bench, and I will try to hold you to that. The presenters will have 15 minutes. So for 2004, that'll be Attorney Daniel Hoff, and for 2003, that'll be Attorney Richard Essenberg. When you have finished making your remarks, if you're one of the commenting speakers, you may leave. There's no reason for you to stay. I think it's sometimes helpful, and I would ask the presenters to stay for the rule petition. So Attorney Essenberg and Attorney Hoff, if you would stay until all of the testimony has been taken on the rules for which you are the presenter, because sometimes there is something that comes up unexpectedly. I would ask that each of you, whether you're a presenter or whether you are a speaker participant, not to repeat what you said to us in written materials. We've had a lot of written participation on these rules, which is wonderful, but we've already read them. So we don't need you to come talk to us and to tell us what we already read. I spent the whole New Year's weekend, not one day, the whole weekend reading comments on these rules. So we've read them. I made notes on them. I don't know what my colleagues did, but probably something similar. So we're up to speed on what you have said to us in the past. So with that little bit of introduction, I will now call the hearing on Rule Petition 20.04. And Attorney Hoff, if you will proceed.
Good morning, Your Honor. Good morning, Justice. Good morning, Supreme Court. If it may please the court, I am Attorney Daniel Hoff from Appleton. I am a private attorney, but I'm here today in my capacity as the State Access to Justice Chair and President, an 18-member commission formed by this court years ago with a mission to expand access to justice across the state. I personally was appointed by the late Senator Ellis and now serve at the pleasure from appointment from Senator Roger Roth. I'm here virtually today to offer for your consideration Petition 20-04 for repeal and to recreate SCR 50, otherwise known as the Student Practice Rule. This rule, I believe, has not been changed since 1979. It needs a relook and an update, in our opinion. The petition that we have drafted along with the document, along with the proposed rule change, was drafted by the commission with input from both law schools, user groups, through the state bar, and also through a review of other states and other jurisdictions on how they handle the issue. It's been a process of over several years. The concept is to provide a rule that provides increased valuable experience to law students and recent graduates from other jurisdictions seeking admission to the state Supreme Court, or state bar, I'm sorry. We are all aware of the valuable experience that we receive in our excellent legal education from the two fine law schools that we have in the state. But that education is completed with valuable experience out there in the actual real world. This will then provide additional assistance to legal providers, which one of the reasons why this the Access to Justice Commission is spearheading this. To those legal providers who provide legal assistance to those who can't afford lawyers and who need one desperately, especially in, I hate to use this term, these challenging.
This rule, if I understand it correctly, does not require the student to be a student at one of the two Wisconsin law schools, correct?
I believe, I'm going to defer that comment, Your Honor, as I or Chief Justice, Madam Chief Justice, with the to the technical provisions of this were drafted primarily by our member of our commission, Mitch, who is the clinical professor at the University of Wisconsin Law School, who can speak to that. I believe the intent was the underlying two law schools, because this court and the state bar has significant oversight. But we also have incoming folks who have passed other law schools who are coming in to seek admission to the state bar. Again, the idea is that there is oversight and supervision by folks who have been actually or who have already been cleared to practice law in the state of Wisconsin and to do this supervision. It is my intent, Your Honor, to yield the virtual podium to next to the, as a UW-88 graduate, proudly to the Dean of the University of Wisconsin Law School, and then next to Mitch, a valued member of our commission, with the State Access to Justice Commission, who has the technical provisions that he has dealt with and has been one of the main scriveners of this particular rule and how it will interplay with some of your questions. I am still going to be here available for questions at the end of this, but I think Mitch is the expert on the draft of the petition and more importantly answer your questions at this time. So unless the court has further inquiry, I guess I would yield at this time to the University of Wisconsin Law School Dean, if it pleases.
All right, that's fine. You have used not quite 5 minutes of your 15 minutes. So now, Dean Tokaji, am I saying your name correctly?
Dean Tokaji, thank you very much.
Tokaji, thank you very much. Well, it's nice to meet you on Zoom. I hadn't met you at all before. So when I was in law school, Ken Davis was the dean. So there have been a couple of deans in between.
Yes, he's my esteemed predecessor, as well as my immediate predecessor, Margaret Raymond. It's a great pleasure and an honor to meet you, Madam Chief Justice, and the other members of this honorable court. I thank you for affording me the opportunity to meet you and to speak before you in support of Rule Petition 2004 regarding student practice rules. And as the new dean, it's a special privilege to speak with you and explain the reasons for that support. As you have counseled, and in the interest of time, I'm going to avoid repeating everything that was set forth in my November 30th letter, and briefly will emphasize 3 points. I did want to first, however, address your question, Madam Chief Justice. If you're correct that this rule is not limited to the two Wisconsin law schools, if you look to section 50.01, subsection 1, it refers to graduates as well as students at any ABA approved law school.
Thank you.
To my 3 points, the first that I wanted to emphasize is the importance of providing practical learning opportunities for our students and students at other law schools as well. Contemporary legal education, much more so now than when I was a student, emphasizes experiential learning, the opportunities to roll your sleeves up and get hands-on experience. I'm very proud that our law school has been a leader in this area. We have today 20 clinical and externship opportunities. It's something that today's law students are looking for, and rightly so, because it gives them better preparation for practice. And this rule will give enhanced opportunities for hands-on experience for students to represent and counsel clients in their second year of law school. The second, access to justice. The proposed rule will expand the pool of students and recent graduates who can provide services to people without the resources to pay. That includes not only the less affluent clients that our Economic Justice Institute serves, the patients who our Center for Patient Partnerships serves, or the criminal defendants and inmates who our Frank J. Remington Center serves, but it also applies to people who are trying to start their own business and may not have resources to afford a lawyer. We're served, some of them at least, by our Law and Entrepreneurship Clinic, as well as Indian tribes and tribal communities throughout the state. This will enhance access to justice. Third and finally, it will help our state maintain its competitive position. We want smart, talented, idealistic students and recent graduates coming here and staying here in Wisconsin and not going to some other states. Other states, including our neighbors, Minnesota and Michigan, are providing these opportunities for practical learning and public service earlier in their law school careers. I would respectfully submit that it's to our competitive advantage to do the same. And I think this will also help us promote the diversity of the bar, inviting people to get some practical experience and providing a pathway to justice for many people. Thank you, Madam Chief Justice.
Yeah, Dean, I have another question for you. I take externs in my chambers all the time. And there's a very big difference in the students I get and what I permit them to do and what they're really capable of doing between a first and a second year student. Yeah. And this is putting the bar, I think, back a little bit. Now, if the court adopts this, students that have had only two semesters of law school can participate and represent a client in court. Why push it back to the first year student rather than having it a second year student?
Well, it will still be second year students, Madam Chief Justice.
Oh, because have finished the second year, just to make myself more clear.
I see. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. When I have a student that's only finished the first year as an extern, and I have a student that's finished the second year as an extern, their capabilities are very different. So this rule pushes it back so the student would be eligible if he or she had completed only 1 year rather than 2 years. And my question was, why push it back there?
Yeah, well, you're correct that it will allow people to get this greater practical experience after their first year of law school, assuming, you know, conventional law students who are on a 3-year path to graduation. Under the current rule, it would be 1.5 years. Respectfully, I think this is valuable experience for our students and for students at other law schools that they are ready. We are still required to certify as law schools that they have completed these requirements. What I have found over the course of my time, 17 years plus as a teacher, and I see I'm being given the stop sign.
Yeah, that's just, I'm going to ask my marshal to let that go because you had time ceded to you by the presenter. So you're still within what was given to you. So if you want to conclude, that'll be fine. And then I'll let you know when that time is up.
Thank you, Madam Chief Justice. What I have found over my 17 plus years as law teaching, I certainly agree there's a big difference between first year law students and second year law students. But I do think that in general, after the first year of law school, while there are certainly differences between second and third year law students, after that first year, when they're in their second year, students have acquired the skills and at least the basic capacity to work effectively, again, under the supervision of a member of the bar, but representing clients, appearing at hearings under that supervision, and counseling clients, again, under that supervision. And it's important to recognize that all of these students and recent graduates will be working under the supervision of a member of the bar. Thank you, Madam Chief Justice. Mm-hmm.
Thank you very much. Let's see. The next person on my hit parade is Professor Mitch. Would you like to take your microphone and begin to tell us a little bit more about this rule?
Good morning, Chief Justice. Good morning, Justices. My name is Mitch, and I'm a member of the Wisconsin Access to Justice Commission, where I've worked with stakeholders to draft, revise, and submit this petition for your review and approval. I'm an elected member of the State Bar Board of Governors, which voted unanimously to support this petition. And for the last 12 years, I've been a clinical law professor, where I have taught hundreds of students how to practice law while providing vital services to communities in need throughout Wisconsin. The proposed rule will increase education and training, increase access to justice, and increase diversity. The old rule was created just over 40 years ago. And what excites me about the new rule is to imagine what things will look like 40 years down the road. When we increase education and training opportunities, what we are doing is investing in the future. And the likely returns on that investment look pretty good to me.
Professor, I'm just going to cut you off because I want to make sure I can get my question in before time runs out. I want to thank you and Attorney Hoff and the Dean for being here today and bringing this rule. I am a product of the student practice rule back in the 90s. I worked in the Dane County DA's office as a law student and then was hired there shortly afterwards. And I could talk all day about the benefits of being able to do that as a law student. So I appreciate the fact that we're taking another look at this rule, but I want to ask you about a specific provision. And I understand that you are the person to ask about specific provisions. And if you aren't, it's too bad because you're the last guy up and there's no one else to ask. So it must be you. I'm looking at 50.02 sub 5, which tells me that the certification may be invalidated by a supervising attorney without at any time, without a hearing, without cause. That's a little concerning to me because not only will we be bringing more students into this state under the student practice rule, we also are going to be increasing the number of supervising attorneys because of that. It seems to me that we're giving supervising attorneys a lot of power and we're not allowing these students any kind of process if their certification can just be invalidated for any reason at any time. And I wanted to give you an opportunity to speak to that. I don't know if you have any idea of what other states do as far as invalidating certificates, if there's any process that other states have, but I just want to give you a chance to speak to that, if you would, please. Thank you.
Absolutely. Thank you, Justice Krofsky. The provision that you've cited is there as a very rarely to be used, if ever to be used, safety valve. In all of my time teaching and before that, being a clinical law student, the practice is such that students need to help building up their confidence to get ready and learning the skills of being a practicing lawyer. What you rarely see, however, it is much more concerning, is a student who is overconfident, who is gung-ho, who needs to potentially be pulled back and said, there are ways in which we do this thing called the practice of law. And this provides a mechanism, again, a safety valve mechanism, which I don't think would need to be used. I haven't used myself. It provides this, and again, as far as process, so as far as talking about potentially, you know, revoking a student's ability to appear in court, the current rule for the last 40 years has allowed judges or clients to do that. And I imagine would have allowed a supervising attorney to also say, you know, look, I don't feel comfortable supervising you in this hearing. This just makes it explicitly clear that the student shouldn't have the ability to sort of contest that or fight that, because the student's role there really is, in most cases, going to be working on behalf of a client. And so we're concerned primarily, again, with the safety of the client here. The education is central, but if the student then gets into a fight about whether or not they can continue, that would bog down the client's right to process, and we don't want to see that happen. So again, I don't see this happening often, but it's really there as a just-in-case sort of safety valve, and it really actually echoes the practice that the current rule contains. It's just much clearer and to the point that's available.
Professor Mitch, can you address what may be a concern of my colleagues, although I too am a product of the student practice rule coming from an out-of-state law school. So I did have to jump through the hoops to get certified through UW Law School. But how are we going to make sure when we're dealing with other law schools that they have the same caliber that we know and trust from students that are coming out of UW and Marquette?
Well, so what this does is this helps helps Wisconsin practitioners, governments, pro bono organizations. It helps us actually train students in Wisconsin law and Wisconsin practice by having them come here and work under supervision, right? So the way that we ensure that, you know, we can't regulate what other schools provide. The ABA puts down very good guidelines. But by bringing students and encouraging students to come to Wisconsin and do a practice-based program, we then, under the supervision of a licensed Wisconsin attorney, that helps make sure that we are actually providing out-of-state students who don't have the wonderful grounding in Wisconsin law that our diploma privilege schools provide. It provides a bit more of that training that's necessary, because then if they want to stay, because right now out-of-state students might come, they may stay here and then enter the bar. And this makes sure that they're more capable and more trained to do so, because they have a longer opportunity. They may, in fact, do 2 summers here, right? Right now, actually, if I can, this actually helps answer the Chief Justice's question about why have someone start right after their first year? And that's actually a really interesting practical matter. So the way that the progression of the law school works is that during your first year, the ABA locks down the curriculum and it's mandatory. In your second, in your summer after your first year, you are highly encouraged to do clinical education. And in your second and final summer between your second and third years of law school, you are highly encouraged to go clerk for a private law firm or for a judge or justice and hopefully parlay that into a job. What this means is what I have seen for more than a decade is students who come to me and start in my program in the summer after their first year, and they're not able to practice. I am not able to give them the full depth and richness of the experience because they can't practice that first summer. We have them in the program for an entire year. They can't practice in the fall. I was in front of Justice Dallet with students back in when she was on the Milwaukee bench, and we had students who at one point couldn't argue, and then when it rolled over to January, then magically they could argue.
I'm going to have to shut you down now because your time has long since passed, in addition to the time that was ceded by the presenter. So we're going to have to move on now to the next presenter, who is Sarah Davis. Ms. Davis?
Madam Chief Justice, Your Honors, good morning. I am very happy to join my colleagues, Mitch and Dean Takagi here, and just wanted to add a couple brief points. I am a clinical professor in the Center for Patient Partnerships, one of the clinics at the law school, and I am also one of the directors of a community academic partnership called Lift Dane, which is working on increasing access to justice through technology. The points that I wanted to add are about ethical development and mental health. We really know that this kind of practical experience provides students and recent grads with a sense of purpose, motivation, and meaningful contribution, and that enabling them to be helping clients is essential for the bar and for the future health and ethical practice of all attorneys in Wisconsin. And then the second point that I wanted to share is around innovation. This rule change really dovetails with other access to justice activities that are happening. So for example, with Lift Dane, we are building technology that will make it easier for people to be self-represented litigants or to solve easy problems, and we are therefore going to be able to focus lawyers and pro bono folks and these students towards representation. And so there's efficiencies there and role optimization, and I really see this as a crucial piece to the access to justice. Thank you for your consideration.
Okay. Professor, I have a question. I'm not sure if you're the right person to respond to it, but the prior rule mentioned compensation, and the current proposed revised rule does not. In the prior rule, students were barred from receiving any compensation from clients. And so my question is, why was that not mentioned in the proposed new rule? And is it anticipated that students would be able to receive compensation from their clients rather than the lawyer or entity supervising the students?
Madam Justice, thank you for this question. I am going to defer to Mitch since he is the expert on all of the sections.
So you don't know the answer to the question. All right, briefly, Professor Mitch, can you answer the question that was posed?
Yes, Justice. The existing rule, this mention of compensation is again rather unclear and vague about the ability for a student to receive compensation from the organization, and this clears that up. It takes out if the payment is made by the client to a law firm, and then that money goes to a student. The current rule is quite vague as to whether or not that is or isn't allowed, and this was designed to clarify that that is okay.
So under the rule as proposed, if the student participated in representing a client of a law firm and the client paid the law firm, the student would be eligible for some part of that payment?
The student could receive payment for their work at the law firm. And every firm, nonprofit, government institution that might have students on staff has different payment arrangements for their students. Sometimes these are volunteer positions, but sometimes they are in fact compensated. And that compensation, again, may be linked to whether or not that firm is able to keep its doors open based on the fees that their clients pay. And we just wanted to avoid any possibility that students who are paid for their internship work are somehow violating a rule, which is a possibility, a possible interpretation of the current rule.
Okay, thank you. Okay, do you have anything to add to your comments, Attorney Hall?
No, Your Honor. No, Madam Chief Justice, we thank you very much for your time and your consideration of this.
Okay, I don't have anybody else that is signed up to speak on Rule 2004, but sometimes people will forget to sign up, and that doesn't mean you can't speak. So is there anybody else who is here who hasn't had a chance to speak, but who is here because they would like to speak on 2004? Okay, with no one giving me the high sign, then I will close the hearing on 2004, and all of you who came solely for that rule can disappear and go about your business. And we thank you very much for working with us to have a hearing on Zoom. We're going to find it's quite helpful, and some of you that would have had to drive a long ways will probably find Zoom helpful as well. So the hearing is now closed on 2004. Okay, we will now pick up.